Welcome back to Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, the best TV and movie podcast ever recorded. I am your host, Ross Bolin, here as always with your other host, Mr. Barrett Dudley. Barrett, we have goddamn gigantic news today.
I know. We've had to cancel Thursday's Sopranos Patreon podcast because we're going to be too neck deep in the first three episodes of season four of Handmaid's Tale. I know we're all very excited.
I was referring to the Mortal Kombat movie.
Yes, yes. Oh, well, also the Mortal Kombat movie.
No, I'm joking about that, too. Yeah. Obviously, that's not the big
news. Here.
We will do some talking about Mortal Kombat later.
Get your greens!
That's usually what I think Scorpion says.
Not excited about Handmaid's Tale, personally.
No, no.
But know that you are.
I was just talking to some people in the Cord. The Cord is strong.
Cord is strong.
You get access to the Cord by joining us on Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some people that are kind of hype about it. I may get dragged into this because I know that Laura wants to watch it. I was almost out.
Yeah.
And then I went like on sabbatical or something over a weekend or I don't know. I went to something and Laura like caught all the way back up.
I had almost
scraped it off the windshield.
Just when you thought you were out.
But so
they
and
pulled
I,
you
I
back
know
in.
She's going to want to watch that and there's a good chance that some, you know, we're going to have to come to the table and make a swap for a swap.
Wow.
I'm
negotiating.
I'm going to put the Nick back on the hot stove, back on the forefront.
Okay.
I fucking watch that. I don't care how gory and medical it is.
It's called compromise, Laura.
And I'm probably going to have to
Handmaid's Tale.
Watch The Handmaid's Tale and
go back to Gilead.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
And the thing is, we'll get to Gilead and then we'll get caught in Gilead. But then we'll get out. But then instead of going back out and saving ourselves and like going to Canada and like living with our family, we're going to go back into Gilead because we got to take it down from the inside.
Got to take it down from the inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see how that works out.
We'll see. I don't know.
But the actually huge news today
is that it has been. The real big news.
Finally confirmed that Game of Thrones returns next year from Deadline, and it was announced all over the damn internet, all over the world over the weekend, right?
Bum, 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 bum.
The House of the Dragon is finally under construction. They revealed the straight-to-series Game of Thrones prequel from George R. R. Martin, Ryan Condal. Is Condal how his last name is? We have to decide how we're going to say Ryan's name now, because we're going to be talking about this guy a lot. C-O-N-D-A-L. How do you think that is? Condal?
I think you pronounce that the con man.
No, that's it. It's the con man. How do we always end up with these nicknames? So
it's the only nickname we have, Russ. It's our bread and butter. That's why people listen to this show.
It is. So we've got George, we've got the con man, and Miguel Sapochnik now in running this thing, and it's launching in 2022. Obviously, no official dates around it, just the year 2022, which, as I'm currently looking at it, and maybe this is just the COVID speaking, the pandemic speaking, but I'll be very pleasantly surprised if we actually get it in 2022.
Oh, we're for sure getting it.
You think they would have said the year if they weren't dead positive 1,000%?
No, we are 100%
getting 2022. So you don't think there's any chance that they're like, because here's what I noticed. They announced this. They're like, House of the Dragon 2022. We're finally doing it. Look, here's these production photos. And they celebrated the news with the official start of production. And they put out all the, brand new Twitter account, brand new Instagram account for House of the Dragon. And then they started releasing these cast photos during a socially distanced table read.
Yes.
And it was the socially distanced table read photos that made me go, yeah, we're not getting this next year. but maybe I'm wrong, and I hope I am. It's just like the general feel for it was like, oh, y'all just fucking started. It is April, bro.
Yeah, but let me say this about the table read thing. Nobody is more concerned with the image of caring about COVID than Hollywood. I promise you, they have this shit figured out by now.
You're right.
Like everybody that wants a vax can have a vax at this point.
Right.
It is very, very, at least in Texas, super easy to get them at this point.
Right.
Like I guarantee you that they that these productions, even with the Oscars last night, for example, like, pretty sure they had everybody vaxxed that wanted to be vaxxed. And everybody that wasn't is getting tested on the daily.
Well, Anthony Hopkins was sleeping in Wales.
That's
so
true.
So it didn't matter if he was vaxxed.
But I'm just, all I'm saying is that, like,
you think they've got this down.
I think that they, at this point, the socially distanced table read is more of like an optics thing.
Oh, yeah. It's like in the NBA.
Than anything else.
All the guys are on the sideline. They're in separate, they're not on the same bench anymore. They've all got their own little area to sit. They all wear their masks, but then they go onto the court and spit all over each other and sweat all over each other. And it's like, this is fucking stupid. It's about optics.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's in this country, unfortunately, due to the politicalization of this entire situation, we have to have the optics. And Hollywood really has to have the optics. And if you've noticed, like, you and I have spoken through this for months and months and months and months, pretty much the whole pandemic, Barrett. Not pretty much. We've talked about it the whole time. The development, how it was going to affect Hollywood. You know, Tom Cruise single-handedly trying to save Hollywood with his Mission Impossible movie. The epic rant he went on. Explained to everyone how he was saving the world. I mean, this has been... It's been fascinating to watch this element of it. Hollywood, maybe more than almost any other industry, has just been, like, completely put in a different spot. Yep. And it will come out of this completely different. And I saw... Matthew McConaughey, who former governor of Texas, future governor of Texas. Has put out a commercial now, welcoming us all back to the movie theater.
Yeah, yeah, they're big on this.
We're back. It's open. We did it. We fucking survived. It's like this full blown. Like, I didn't know we were there.
Dude,
I'm stoked if we are.
I mean, not to just like launch into Oscars talk because we're going to get there, I know, but when Frances McDormand wins Oscars and doesn't take the stage to make like a political statement and instead begs people to start going back to movie theaters, you know that the industry is fucked.
Yeah.
Like, wild fucked.
So that's where I'm like, okay.
Right. They desperately need people to go back to movie theaters. They really do. They really, really need to get people back.
Well, so here's part of it was McConaughey goes.
Experiencing things in their old forms.
McConaughey goes, the movie theater industry employs 150,000 Americans or something like that. And I was like, damn. And then I thought about it and I was like, wait a minute. It's not that many people. And aren't most of them teenagers? You know what I mean?
But some of them are Aaron Sorkin, you know what I mean? So
sure, I get it. But it's like... It feels like there's 15 dudes, white dudes in Hollywood going, fuck, and trying to get it fixed for themselves.
That's true.
And then there's everybody else who's like, yeah, we're going to figure out the new way to do this. Y'all keep trying your best.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, optics, right?
Yeah.
Like, the studio execs want their bottom lines back.
Yeah.
They don't want, they want to make $1 billion at the box office, not, you know.
Streaming.
Take your $8 a month for streaming.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely,
it's an interesting spot.
They have an ulterior motive here, but at the same time,
money.
It is an industry that does employ lots and lots and lots of people.
It does,
and it is, you know, despite the people at the top really being the ones to rake it all in, it is better for everybody if it can assume some of its old, you know, of its old ways.
And now, the 150,000 people. Employed by the movie theater industry does not count everyone in Hollywood. Does not count.
That's literally stage, just movie theater.
That's just industry. Literally selling you popcorn and tickets and people at the door and shit. So I'm talking
the people screening the films, like all that type of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. You get a lot more people if you add in everybody from writers to sound and stage and lighting and all of the different. Yeah.
Production assistants.
You've seen. I mean,
boom guys.
You and I. You know. We know a lot about movies. When you see a on-set production of a film, you know, the zoomed-out version with the 15 cameras and the 27 people making sure everything looks right, and you're like, oh, my God. Sometimes it's easy to forget how much goes into this stuff. COVID has been a lovely reminder of that, if nothing else. And I'm excited to see how many people they're able to convince to get back into the movie theaters quick, fast, right? Like, they've clearly, based on the Oscars, the McConaughey commercial, they're saying, like, full speed ahead, right now, no more waiting, let's go, let's fucking get the... But then I'm like, okay, so what do I want to go see this weekend?
Yeah, and I think that's...
So, like, what the fuck is out?
That's what it is for me. Like, I'm ready to go back as soon as
something
hits
theaters.
Yeah, and I think... I think now that I'm all, you know, geeked up on Marvel
and vaxxed out,
that I'll go for Black Widow. I think that's coming in June, and I'll go see Black Widow in theaters for sure.
Okay,
like I think that's probably a big Marvel franchise like that,
mm-hmm.
which is sort of coming to streaming, like we've talked about, but you have to pay $30-some-odd for it.
Yeah,
it's the real test. People like to see those movies in theaters. They've got tons and tons of fans. Like. Maybe families with kids will be like, sure, let's do the $30 at home instead of whatever it costs, you know, five people going to the theater plus popcorn and sodas for everybody is like,
how much is a banana? $10?
Couldn't be more than $10. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I do think that there are some movies. There are definitely movies on the slate for this summer and then certainly going into the fall.
That will pull you in.
That will definitely, I mean, like, come on, Top Gun? I'm not trying to watch that at home.
Dude, my father, this is a 63-year-old man. He doesn't go to the fucking movies very often because mm-hmm. it's just not really his style.
Yeah.
That dude, when I called him yesterday, was like, I can't wait to go see Top Gun 2. Like, that's going to be the one that takes me to theaters. And right. I was like, what? Like, that's not what I expected you to say at all. But seriously, people are at this point where it's like, I mean, dude, you and I loved movies before. I was going to the movies 10 times a year before COVID.
Yeah.
This is a big piece of, like, my getting out of the house and going and doing something,
totally.
Man. And, like, getting out and watching a movie with all these other people around me. And that the in-theater experience, the movie theater popcorn, all the things they're selling you on, those are real. Like, that's a very real experience
that I was
very fond of before it was taken from me. And I look forward to seeing if we can get it back all the way or even better than it was.
Fast and Furious 9 coming soon.
That's going to bring you 9. But then when you look at the Marvel slate, you go, it's not that many.
Right.
It's not that many movies.
Let me
take us back to the House of the Dragon
quick. Yes, but back to House of the Dragon. Yeah. Yes, that was quite the tangent there.
we do our thing. So House of the Dragon's coming in 2022, starring...
Anyway, my point was, before you get to that,
yeah.
I am positive that it'll be here in 2022.
Okay.
In fact, I expect them to try to coincide with the usual launch dates of previous Game of Thrones seasons, which usually, except for one, usually aired in April.
Interesting.
I think that if they're doing table reads, that means that they are very close to filming.
Mm-hmm.
I think they will be filming for probably 4 months.
Max, right?
Something like that, yeah. These shows take longer to shoot. They filmed Promising Young Woman 23 days.
Damn,
crazy how they can do a movie like that.
They will turn around movies quick.
Yeah, they really can.
Especially with the tax shit that they have. A lot of it's financial and scheduling.
Anyways, they're probably shooting this summer, I would imagine.
Okay.
Have it wrapped up by the fall. Gives them several months to, like, edit and
hype it.
Do the thing. And I they want this sooner rather than later. So I feel like they'll be foot on the pedal. Anyways, House of the Dragon, starring. Go ahead.
So, look, it's Patty... Considine. Olivia Cooke, Matt Smith, Emma D'Arcy, Fabian Frankel, Riz Ifans? I don't know. Ifans. Eve Best and Sonia Mizuno. I don't know who any of those people are. House of the Dragon.
You know who Patty Considine is.
Okay, yes.
Because he's from The Outsider. And Sonia Mizuno from Devs. I had an issue with her acting.
Oh, yeah, we talked about that. Yeah. Looking forward to seeing how she's grown to impress you, Barrett.
I hope that she has.
I heard she heard your critiques.
I truly do.
And went back into the lab.
It was just
a
few notes, you know?
You're just giving her some notes.
I'm just giving her some notes.
That's all. So the important thing is that this was co-created by George R. R. Martin and the Con Man.
And the Con Man, yeah.
We
got two Con Mans. We got Patty Con Man and we got Ryan Con Man.
We do.
Ryan
Conman wrote the pilot script that landed the series order.
Yeah.
Which I'm at the risk of sounding like a moron. This guy wasn't involved with Thrones, right?
No, I do not think so. I don't think he was involved in the original series.
Because we needed desperately a new set of eyeballs for this thing. And
are you worried that Miguel Sapochnik is the showrunner?
No, because I feel like him and I mean, a totally new guy working with him, I feel like, would be a good thing. I don't know. And I don't know how involved George actually is in any of this.
We've obviously got a year to do temperature checks.
We do.
Here. But so give me, now that we have an announcement, this is on, it's popping, it is about to be filming, they're doing table reads.
Yes.
It's coming out next year. Give me your, like, Give me your hype level. Give me some odds. You think this is actually good?
Yeah, I'll get you. So we've got Sapochnik doing the.
He's the
pilot.
He's the showrunner.
Yeah, and then
so he'll probably
the con man is co-showrunning with him.
Okay. Okay.
So he directed the pilot, Sapochnik.
Yep.
So the first episode's going to be directed by Sapochnik, and he will do additional episodes, it says.
I'm sure,
so we don't know how many. It's set 300 years before the events of Game of Thrones, as we have laid out before. It tells the story of the House Targaryen. The Khan woman is playing... The Khan... Considine... Patty is a man?
Patty's a man.
Patty is a man. Patty Khan man, too.
He was El Cucaracha.
Is playing... King Viserys Targaryen. We've got the Hightower family is the other, another big family with a lot of cast members that have the last name Hightower.
Okay, hate them. Hate them.
Hate the Hightowers. And yeah, obviously is the number one Game of Thrones podcast in the world. We are excited. Can't wait to cover it. Have a ton to gain in terms of podcast success. And as a result of the return and further development of the A Song of Ice and Fire universe, which got me thinking... Beyond the obvious, George R. R. Martin benefiting massively every time they do anything with this universe now, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you think the ex-cast members are stoked on the new shows coming out, that they'll make more money from appearances and shit like that forever, or are they annoyed that this will haunt them forever? I feel like they're probably in a similar spot as you and I, where it's like, I mean, we weren't in the series acting, but we covered it extensively on our podcast. We're heavily invested in it. And then by the end of it, Game of Thrones was sort of sullied for us like everyone else for a short period of time. And now it's like this opportunity at rebirth to rejuvenate the franchise, give us something to be excited about.
Yeah, I think it's a win-win for all of the former cast members and people associated with that show, even Benioff and Weiss.
Like if it flops, it doesn't hurt them.
Because here's why. One, something new will take away the taste in our mouth that we're all living with now for multiple years.
Too long.
Of the end of season 8.
Right.
Like having something new to talk about and to think about and to consider and decide how good it is or isn't will make us... Like, it's you know, we get to chew on something else.
It's a reframing for everything.
And so, so either way, if this new show is great, we get to bask in the mimba of old Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Like, that was great, and this is great, and it's all so great. I cannot wait for more, you know, marvel at the hell up. Just give me all of it. Keep it going, HBO baby.
Yes.
Right? And if it sucks, then we get to bask in the mimba of the old Game of Thrones.
And Benioff and Weiss get to go, see?
Exactly. And we get to be like, oh, God, you know, we really had it good back then.
So,
boy, we sure had it good. This is garbage. This is trash. We were ungrateful bastards about when we had it good. And so either way, it's like, I think it's going to benefit the memory of original Game of Thrones series.
I agree with that. I do worry about the pressure here.
I think there's a lot of pressure.
Not just from a production standpoint, from an acting standpoint. Look, everyone involved in this project knows they have to hit a home run here.
Yep.
Everyone. And that presents pressure, a very pressure-packed situation. It just gives me the worry, right? You asked me, like, what I think, you know, what do I think our odds are at having a great success here? Man, it's just a 50-50 coin flip from right now, from where I'm sitting. Especially based on, like, you've got guys involved who are in the old series. You've got GRRM's name attached still as a, writer. And it's just, there's definitely concern.
I mean, George as a writer is honestly huge. The fact that he is participating in this, let's not forget, he was participating in the best seasons of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, when he bowed out is when they got really screwed.
That right. Not only when they like lost his books to back them up, but
also
he exited a little earlier than that, just from like participating in the writing and in the show creation. And those first three, four seasons where he was involved are the best ones.
Way more heavily involved George seasons were better.
Yeah, I too am worried for the exact same reasons that you laid out there. This is a lot of pressure. The first one was so well cast, but like we talked about a few weeks ago, at the same time, I am I am hopeful because this is HBO. They rarely miss. A lot of people in the room making the decisions are known for making good decisions.
And have a lot to gain.
The fact that they had a whole ass other series set up with like a bigger star than anybody listed here in Naomi Watts, and like they shot a whole ass pilot and they did the whole thing and they were like,
Nope. I think like, that lets you know how seriously they're taking it.
Yes. They I mean, I'm sure that that would have been a successful show. I'm positive it would have been successful. I don't know if it would have been good. It would have been successful. And they were like, No, we don't like it. They didn't even rewrite it or reshoot it. They were
just
like,
said, nah. This didn't work.
And this one, they feel very, very confident about. And so that, I think that bodes really well.
I think so too. It's just terrifying. I mean, look, it was, it's the show that made me reexamine what my favorite show was,
right?
Slot it there, and then unslot it by the end. So it was like, I mean, it was a dramatic experience for us as fans to go through that final season, to finally be, you know, not on the cusp, but to finally know we are getting this one. This is fucking happening, and it's happening next year. It just feels nice, Barrett. Yeah. It's been a minute.
I think, you know, my kind of final thought here on the whole, on the world of GOT, I think I read something else that George is also tied to another TV show coming out maybe that is not Game of Thrones. There was some other George news, but it basically, like, it was the nail in the coffin of the books ever being finished, I'm pretty sure. I don't know if there's Vegas odds on this now, but like I give the percentage chance that another book comes out, even one more, at like 10% now, I would say.
Yeah, okay. I'm seeing all these headlines from last week here. Apparently he opened up on some level about the struggles he's having writing, and says he's, quote, hugely behind, end quote, on the Winds of Winter book.
It's not happening.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've joked about this for a lot of years. At some point, he's going to have to admit this to himself.
Yeah.
And get either somebody else to do it.
He probably has admitted it to himself. He's just worried about the blowback if he just comes right out and says it.
That people might kill him.
Yeah.
How do you fall behind on a book you're writing?
My guess is that, and well, I don't know. He's pretty stingy with these things. But I wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, passes at some point over the next 1 to 3 decades.
I love that you gave him 30 years.
Well, I don't know how old he is. He's not actually that old, right?
He's not as old as he looks. Old.
Yeah. He's not 70, is he?
Oh, I think he is now. Let me see. Yeah, 72.
72? Okay. Yeah. All right. So 1 to 2 decades then. How about that?
That's fair.
Somebody else will probably come along and finish him up. But I don't think it's happening from him.
No, I don't think so either. Which is okay. It is what it is. We
it
got
is
five.
What it is. Yep.
Whatever. Yeah. Anyway, Game of Thrones 2022, House of the Dragon, cannot wait. Obviously, the number one Game of Thrones podcast in the world will be covering it right here, episode by episode. Today's episode of OCC is brought to you by Athletic Greens. Get your greens! The most comprehensive daily nutritional beverage Barrett and I have ever tried. It's great stuff. Obviously, life is hard. It's difficult to maintain effective nutritional habits given everything we have to deal with every single day with work and family and friends and kids and schedules and poor sleep and exercise and stress and oftentimes just simply not eating enough of the right foods. Is where we go wrong. That's where Barrett and I turn to Athletic Greens. Their daily all-in-one superfood powder is your nutritional essential, by far the easiest, most delicious nutritional habit that you can add to your health routine today and empower you to take ownership of your health. One tasty scoop of Athletic Greens contains 75 vitamins, minerals, whole foods sourced ingredients, including a multivitamin, multimineral, probiotic, green superfood, and more that all work together to fill the nutritional gaps in your diet, increase energy and focus, aid with digestion, and support a healthy immune system, and all without the need to take multiple products, which is key, Barrett, when you get your greens.
Get your greens! That's what I grabbed. That's what I yelled when I grabbed George by the collar, and I said, finish those books. If he was doing a daily Athletic Greens, he'd probably have them done.
We'd already have two more, probably.
So he'd be adding books on. He'd be like, wait, no, I'm running 4 now because of Athletic Greens.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But the son of a bitch, he just wouldn't listen.
No, he just wouldn't listen.
He wouldn't simply visit athleticgreens.com/dragon today and join health experts, podcasters, athletes, and health-conscious go-getters around the world who make a daily commitment to their health every single day and that commit to finish the books they started writing. You can get a free year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs today when you simply visit athleticgreens.com/dragon. Athleticgreens.com/dragon. Free year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs today. So go and get your greens.
Get your greens.
Barry, let's talk about which Oscar movies were worth watching.
Okay.
And the Oscars in general.
Yeah, yeah.
They took place this past weekend. I think probably the most interesting aspect of this year's award show was that they chose to do Best Actor as the last award.
Correct.
Instead of Best Picture, and then they gave it to an 83-year-old man who was sleeping in Wales.
That is right.
Which is hysterical. Anthony Hopkins won Best Actor for The Father.
Yep.
He hasn't even been, I don't believe he's won since The Silence of the Lambs, which was in 91.
Okay.
And
this is his second Oscar, I know that.
Yeah, so that was the last one, Silence of the Lambs. He didn't go.
No.
He's not even in the country. He's in his home of Wales, sleeping. Mm-hmm. He wakes up, he sees that he won the last award of the night, and he puts up like an Instagram. He's like, you know Anthony Hopkins, bro. He's like super soft, but he's just like, I thank you very much. What an honor. Yay.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, what?
Yeah.
Weird. What was that move about?
So the Oscars got blasted for a variety of reasons, which was very predictable, I will say.
Yeah, like, it always happens.
That's just what was going to happen. I actually didn't find it offensive at all. Anything about the show, I thought it was okay. It's always kind of a boring one.
It's more serious. We've talked about this.
And they did some interesting things, but it's always over 3 hours and kind of a droll. And, you know, I just tune in because it's like, kind of because I can't look away. I feel an obligation to watch.
Yeah.
You know, my time would certainly be better served elsewhere, but I like to watch and I feel I must.
Well, and for the pop culture and fashion elements of it too, there's more for you here than most people.
Sure.
I think.
So this was a, you know, and I think you're aware that Steven Soderbergh was producing this version of the Oscars.
Okay.
And so he was, that's why, I don't know, did you see the opening?
Uh-uh.
Okay, I'll talk about the opening in a second.
Yeah.
But like, a lot of choices were made. It was obviously in the Union Station instead of in the Dolby Theater. Mm-hmm. So it was much smaller, tighter, more intimate, a little bit more like the early days of the Oscars, where it was mostly just the nominees and the celebs just hanging out in a small room. There weren't really any members of the public, I don't believe. And the camera angles were a little bit different. It was filmed with more of like a film, like a movie vibe to it in general. They didn't really show clips of the movies and the actors.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Except for the movie nominations. But instead, they just like let the presenters kind of talk about acting. And
can I ask you about that element?
Some of the nominees. Yeah.
Have you ever found it strange that they, because I was always anti-clip.
Okay.
Here's why. If I've seen the movie, I've seen the movie.
Yeah.
If I haven't seen the movie, don't show me one of the best parts of the movie, you fucking asshole.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't want to see the best scene from the film that you think got Daniel Day-Lewis nominated before I see the rest of the film.
Yeah.
I've never understood that.
I'm very torn on it, but what you're saying speaks to like a larger thing, which is kind of like, is the Oscars really, should it even be viewed by casual viewers anymore? And the ratings say that it's not being viewed by casual viewers anymore. Now, this year, obviously, we knew that was coming. There weren't any big tentpole films nominated, like Tenet, you know, was nominated for some special effects and I think one.
Well, that was the one tentpole film that was like, we will try.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then everybody
and
saw what happened. Everybody else pushed.
These were indie art house films, so like people hadn't seen the movies, right? And so you tune in, and this might be a year where your casual fan probably really wanted the clips because they didn't watch these movies.
Yeah.
So,
that's a good point.
But at the same time, I'm with you. Just watch the movies then.
Or don't fucking tune in, I guess.
And then I waffle back because, like, you know, Daniel Kaluuya doing the I Am a Revolutionary is awesome. So any chance to like throw that clip on there and like get a chance to see him do that is so powerful and amazing. So like I get both ways. I thought it was fine that they dropped it for this year for the acting categories because I agree with you. And then I heard another take that I really liked. The clips, especially the ones they show for the acting categories, I think they do like... They do, and this is not an original take, something that I heard somebody say, and I'm adopting it now because I agree with it. But it's like, they encourage those types of moments in quote-unquote Oscar bait films. And so you'll be watching some Oscar bait film that like didn't quite work, and you'll get to like the moment where somebody
tries to deliver
their big monologue, and it's like, oh, this is where they thought they were going to win an Oscar.
Yep.
And it encourages those big moments a little bit, and
I don't like that.
Yeah,
you got to earn
Instead of just letting the movie be, instead of letting the performance be, you don't have to have like the Oscar monologue moment, right?
Which they always try to show if there is one, and then it kind of fucks with the vibes if you haven't seen it. It's like, I don't know if I want to watch that now.
So, anyways, the decision to put actress and then actor last was clearly made with the thought that it was that actor was going to Chadwick Boseman.
Ah.
And then it didn't.
Got it.
It was a miscalculation.
Okay.
But, it, I mean, like...
Wait. They thought a late black actor was probably going to win Best Actor to close this thing out, and then an old sleeping white dude in Wales won?
Yes.
That's not good.
And it was, and it gave, like, I think that there was probably somebody there to accept the award on behalf of Chadwick had he won.
Oh,
he would
man.
Have ended on a little acceptance speech and a good night. And instead, Joaquin Phoenix had to be like, well, guess that's it then. Good night. And
everybody
he was
have
like,
a great
he's
one.
The worst person to do that. He didn't even want to be up there in the first place.
Yeah, he's very awkward.
Like, very awkward, very. So
socially,
just,
he doesn't have all the social skills.
That is, that was the narrative that was pitched.
Okay.
That was definitely the odds on favorite was for Chadwick to win that award posthumously. And he didn't, and it got a lot of heat. The other thing that people didn't like is how fast the in memoriam went.
I didn't have
a beef with that.
I also saw people upset with specific people that were left off, which is starting to make me feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone, because this has been like every year of my life.
Who was left off
with the Academy Awards? Some dude I've never heard of. Like, frankly, dude, like when I pass one day, it's not really my concern that they do that anybody does a good job with like making sure that as many people as possible are aware that I'm dead, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't really get that element of it. It's like Steven died last year. And they left him off. Everybody needs to know Steven's dead. It's like, do we? I thought Steven was out there still kicking it, and I was pretty happy with that. So
yeah. So that,
well, the complaining about the Academy Awards, though, the Oscars, the nits we pick as a society are just the same every year. It's just kind of like, I mean, as a society, you and I pick different nits and specific important talking points like the ones we're touching on today. But as a people, Twitter, for instance, it's just gotten old at this point. I'm like, I really don't care for y'all's opinions.
Yeah.
We get it. Y'all think it's stupid. You don't like it. You haven't seen the movies.
I'm 100% with
you. Yeah, just like fuck off, though.
Yeah, it was, You could write the complaints before you even saw the Oscars last night.
That's why it's stupid.
So people were sitting at their phones and their keyboards just waiting.
So I'll be honest with you. I didn't participate in that. Yeah. I didn't want to. I mean, this year I spent my time working through as many of these movies as I could.
Yeah, you ended up doing a pretty incredible job.
By accident, yeah. I kind of like, well, just the long story short is, I worked myself into the point where I thought I was going to die.
Uh-huh.
And so then I had to stay in bed for 2 days and watch movies. And so I got to knock out a bunch of these movies. Let's just talk about the ones that I know for a fact I wholeheartedly recommend to this entire audience listening that they can watch.
Yep.
You and I did Promising Young Woman. We talked about it.
Yeah, we both seen Promising Young Woman, and we both seen Judas and the Black Messiah.
We reviewed both of them.
Both of which we talked about and I think highly recommend.
Yes. Both of those you can add to the list. And just because we've already talked about it some, I'll even put Ma Rainey's Black Bottom on that list.
Okay.
I do think it is worth watching. I did not think it was a top five movie this year. I thought Chadwick's performance was amazing. Everything else was a little hit or miss based on, you know, my own white takes.
And an interesting thing about that, about what you just mentioned, that maybe kind of explains what happened there, is that every winner in the big categories, whether it was cinematography or screenplay or acting or any of the, or like basically all those big ones, the movies that won were nominated for Best Picture. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom was not nominated for Best Picture.
Got it.
It was only nominated for, it won a couple of awards. It won for hair and makeup and for costume design, but it was not nominated for Best Picture. And all four acting awards, both screenplay awards, directing, cinematography, all of those awards went to movies that were nominated for Best Picture.
That's interesting.
So just kind of...
I get it, obviously. I get them giving it the respect that they did, especially considering that Chadwick passed after.
Right, I mean, I'm just saying it's interesting that you also, that you kind of felt that way too. Like, great Chadwick performance, but not really a best movie type.
No, I didn't think it was.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was. So I guess that they did have it a little more lined up with what I think.
Right. I mean, I think if you're a fan of performances specifically, if that's what you like about movies, I think my read is that you should see it for his performance.
It's a good movie anyway.
Yeah.
It's just, yes, his performance obviously is very worth seeing. And then, and just in the grand scheme of things, like, if you're classifying movie as, like, you should watch or you should not watch, it's definitely a you should watch.
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of movies that are you should not watch, but we're only talking about the ones you should watch today. So, yes, those three movies you and I covered, we recommend Promising Young Woman, Judas and the Black Messiah. I have seen Ma Rainey's Black Bottom and do highly recommend it, if not just for the Chadwick performance. The ones I worked my way through more recently are Minari was the first one. Phenomenal. Very, very good. We're getting a lot more black stories now.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get more Asian stories as well.
Yes.
That is obviously a good thing for everybody. And the more that we can share our cultures and our stories with each other, the better off we'll all be. So Minari was one that I hit and thoroughly enjoyed. It is definitely like all of these movies, man, the ones I watched recently, they'll test you. They're emotional. They're about struggle. They're about life. Right? These are the artsy movies that wouldn't have dropped. Like, this shit, these are not easy watches for the most part.
No, they are in fact, actively difficult to hit play on because I'm just like, ugh.
Okay, so Barrett, highly recommend Minari. If out of the three I'm about to touch on, it's the easiest.
Yeah, it's probably the lightest out of the three that I know you watched.
Sound of Metal is one of the hardest movies I've ever had to get through. I have watched it in five different sittings so far for 30 minutes at a time. And I am just like, dude, they did such a good job with the sound editing, which they ended up winning for at the Oscars. That you will feel like you are experiencing hearing loss at the beginning of this movie.
One thing I was curious about that I didn't actually have a moment to look up, so maybe the Clam Fam can help us out here and let us know. Did Riz Ahmed do anything during his performance to, like, block out his hearing? Did he wear, like, earplugs, or did he do something to, like, kind of...
Oh, I'm sure he did something.
Yeah? Yeah, you know?
That's a good question. Yeah. If you know specifically what Riz did to capture this character's hearing impairment as it goes on throughout the... Just the premise of the movie is that this guy's a heavy metal drummer. This is in the Amazon description, all right? I'm not spoiling anything. He's a heavy metal drummer that experiences hearing loss and has to realign his entire life around that struggle. And the way it is, like, first of all, the movie opens with showing you the allure of metal. What it is about this type of music that is it my jam? All right. So, like, metal music, I've always kind of been like, I don't really get why you would go stand in a room with the loudest possible shit going for like an hour while people just scream into the microphone. Like, that doesn't appeal to me. I don't know if it's like I really don't know. I've never been a metal guy. And watching the opening of the movie, I was like, all right, I get it. Like, that totally makes sense.
Well, that's
I completely understand.
That they were able to pull that off.
And then within 10 minutes of that, you're like, oh no, 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 stop, stop, don't, I see what's happening, don't do this. And then you have to bounce. Like, it is a brutal emotional roller coaster about finding yourself and learning to live with yourself and love yourself and also others and like needing support. And like, this dude is also an addict. Like, it just got super heavy, super quick. So first sit down, I made it 20 minutes or whatever. And then I was like, oh, fucking absolutely not. And I tried to bounce and I was like, you know what I'll throw on, Barrett? Nomadland. That can't be as emotionally jarring as this, and it wasn't, but it is equally depressing.
Yeah.
It is about...
Did you finish that one?
No, I'm not done with Nomadland yet, so I'm still working my way through it, but I can wholeheartedly recommend it. Obviously, any movie Frances McDormand is in at this point, just like with guys like Daniel Day-Lewis, I am going to watch. I don't care if she makes a movie about being a fucking Teletubby. I'm going to watch her do that role.
Yeah.
She's that good at this point. So me sitting here and being like, you should really watch an Oscar-nominated film that was starring Frances McDormand feels stupid.
Right.
But like, no. This is what it's like. It's this movie helps you understand an element of our country that I think most of us probably don't have a grip on.
Yes. Yeah. This one, I mean, maybe more so than any of the others, I think found a piece of America that we don't really pay almost any attention to, like a livelihood.
Surely not in the Hollywood scene.
In a world, and just something that we, you know, I know we're going to get to Mare of Easttown in a little bit, but a lot of the same I've not really seen Nomadland, but I do know what it's about. And kind of the same, a little bit of the same thing going on with Mayor of Easttown, because I know that we know of blue collar areas, but I think especially down here in Texas, we think of them like as being like more in flyover states or in the South, and like that's the type of thing that happens, yeah. You know, with cornfields or you know in the deep Southern states, but it's everywhere, man. The communities like that, they're right outside of big cities. They're in coastal states. They're like, that's everywhere too. And so that's a small piece of what I find so interesting and compelling about Mayor of Easttown. But Francis, some other things to note about Nomadland. One, it's easy to watch. It's on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
Two, while the
awards, Sound of Metal on Amazon, by the way.
The awards were very spread around last night, which I personally like. Do you like that when everything kind of gets a little bit of a win, or do you like it when one movie kind of dominates?
No, I like it when it's spread out.
Yeah. So pretty much everything got an award last night.
They just gave out candy.
So that was nice. But if there was kind of one big winner, it was Nomadland, because Chloe Zhao became the second woman and the first woman of color to win Best Director. Frances McDormand picked up her third Best Actress award, which is more than Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep also has three Academy Awards, but one of them is supporting. So Frances McDormand, three Best Actresses. Only other person to have done that is Katharine Hepburn.
I was going to say, I would love anybody try to name an actress that is on that level. Like,
yeah. I mean, it's her and Meryl. Right?
She ascended to the Meryl Streep plane, yeah. Dude. That's fucking hard to do in the middle of your career. She's still going. Yeah, I mean, my dad and I talked about this a little bit too. Like, when any speech she does, you go, well, that woman is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Daniel Day-Lewis, right? Every time he's ever gotten on stage and spoken, I go, this motherfucker is completely insane. Well, yeah. How could you become another person if you weren't crazy? You have to have a different skill set and outlook to be. It's like the same thing that everybody will argue with, like Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, any of the best athletes in the world. You have to have a different type of mentality to achieve that level.
Yeah.
There aren't very many people who can do this. What Francis, what Daniel Day-Lewis, what Meryl Streep, what people who become the character they're playing do. That shit is fucking another level, and she has tapped into it in a way that we've only seen a handful of people do in my lifetime. So it's pretty crazy to see. I mean, she went from like, she's that quirky woman from the silly fucking, oh my God, what was the name of the, Burn After Reading, was like one of the first things where I really noticed though, like, okay, she's got something special, but I can't tell what it is. And then she's built from there to like, I don't think there's anybody even counting Meryl Streep right now that anybody's picking in front of this woman to be their star.
Yeah.
Now, very specific type
for
of roles.
A certain type of, yes. Yep. Yep. Totally.
And she doesn't exactly like to change her look up much. Like, she's like, this is what you got to work with. I'm not fucking with my hair. I'm going to show up and play the part.
Yeah.
And that's sort of it's the one like weird thing that they all have, these best of the best of the best actors and actresses. It just, kind of freak you out a little bit.
Yeah, totally.
When you have to watch them talk as themselves. Anyway, awesome Nomadland.
It picked up big awards. Director, best film, and best actress there. So it I think it was kind of the champion of the night, if there was one. But, again, everything got a little love. So that was nice to see, and it kind of made...
They even gave Tenet one of them.
Tenet
like you
got
said,
something.
They gave him something to make them... Hey, thanks for trying, guys. You went to the theater. You really went to bat for all of us. Here's a sound award.
Yeah, yeah. Or no, visual effects.
Visual effects. Sorry, you're right. Yeah. You're right. Sound is for Sound of Metal people. Anyway,
do you think that now, like the guys in the sound department, they're just like fighting each other for the next drumming movie? Since that seems like a shoo-in way to win a sound editing award.
Yeah, they're trying to get Nick Cannon on for Drumline 2 right now.
Yeah,
so they can do
like, no, I'm doing the Tommy Lee movie.
Exactly.
but not the Netflix one that was kind of weird and gross.
It's okay. It was just like, it was weird. I'll give you that.
Get Machine Gun Kelly back to reprise the role.
Yes.
Let's see. Oh, I wanted to, I said I was going to mention the intro. It was Soderbergh producing. He didn't actually direct it, but the intro was very, very, very cool. It had me super hyped for the rest of the awards. And then like 15 minutes later, I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be boring again.
Yeah, that's how it goes, though.
The intro was basically, he was like, I have this intro saved for when if I ever want to do another Oceans film, and I'm just going to use it for the Oscars.
So nice.
It was Regina King like grabbing the award and them doing like a tracking shot of her walking from outside into the theater, down the red carpet, like up to the stage, all while this like jazzy little rock beat played and like the little cool
snake
60s
jazz
colors like popped up on the screen and the names. And yeah, it was, you know, it was Ocean's music. And that was very, very dope. And then let's see.
So you enjoyed yourself, all said and
done?
Well,
I liked the intro. And I was, you know, full disclosure, I didn't sit down on the couch and just sit there for 3 hours. I watched the intro, and then I was cooking and grilling and, like, doing other stuff. And
yard work, lifting weights.
No yard work, but mostly all kitchen things. The other thing, they did not... I mentioned the clips. Mm-hmm. They also didn't have any musical performances. There was no host. There was only like one bit that they did where they did like some music trivia with Questlove and Lil Rel.
Well, they did have, what's her name? Shake Her Ass.
Yeah, Glenn Close did the butt. That was fun.
I was thoroughly disappointed in how many actual Hollywood people were like, wow, how relatable of Glenn Close. Bro, you think they went up to Glenn Close and pitched that without prior approval? Like, people are that dumb?
No, it was definitely staged.
A-list celebrities were on Twitter like, wow, Glenn Close. And I was like, you're a fucking moron.
Yeah.
What? Anyway, that just melted my brain. Those moments are always scripted. People, what world do you live in where you think any of these people doesn't take themselves too seriously to where they could do something like that without it being planned? You're crazy.
Yeah.
You're fucking crazy if you think they would go up to Glenn Close without her knowing.
They played it well because the first two little interactions with Andrew Day and then Daniel Kaluuya were very much like just
obvious,
that easy it was, back and forth, not really staged.
Set up
like
too.
I mean, Andrew Day, said a bunch of stuff that couldn't even be aired on television, and in which we think she just trashed the Oscars. She was nominated for, by the way, so that was fun.
Tight. I respect that.
And Daniel Kaluuya just like shot the shit with his former co-star from Get Out. So they set it up nicely. But yes, of course Glenn Close was in on that bit. You think she just had the whole entire history of the butt memorized?
Come on.
Come on.
Come on, people. She did crush it, but like that's what she does. And
yes.
And for her, also, what is the deal with her situation? They've nominated her like 40 times.
I think that she was like, yeah, I'll do this, but you better fucking give me the award the next time I'm nominated.
Okay. You think that was the trade?
Yeah.
Look, mm-hmm. I'll do the butt. But I demand
an
award
a butt
next
at the
time.
End of the butt.
Yeah, exactly.
They did not play off anybody. They let everybody basically talk for as long as they wanted to in the speeches.
That seems risky.
Which was, I liked it. It was good. But the cost of that was, despite the pared-down show, despite only one bit, despite no musical performances, despite no host,
still,
this motherfucker still went 20 minutes over the runtime. And I just don't, like...
It's tough, man. It's a
there's
long...
There's no way to get this thing under 3 hours, and that's just the bottom line.
4 hours on a Sunday is a lot
to
ask of the humans.
It is.
That's like a third of the day we're awake.
I was... And that got me thinking about how, yeah, maybe they should air... You know, they should have the Oscars on a Sunday night, but then they should have, like, why don't they do, like, an hour on the Monday night that's, like, a supercut of all the good stuff and everybody winning
the awards. With
everything
cut out that's
shitty?
And then,
like, the best moments of people's speeches.
Dude, I would watch that.
Like, right?
I will not watch the 4 hours anymore.
Wouldn't you be down for a one-hour supercut of just, like,
absolutely,
all the best stuff?
Yes, but this is the kind of shit that they're refusing to do.
Yeah.
Like, somebody, I guarantee you, has pitched, like, what if we did this stupid show on Sunday and everybody who wants to tune in like a psycho for 4 hours?
Don't take away the live version of it.
But
like, there are a lot of people that want that, too. But then,
clearly, there's a general public need in the year 2021 for a version of this that is digestible, more easily digestible, as we like to put it here on Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. It 4 hours is a goddamn lifetime, Barrett. We don't have time for this shit. Anyway, the one thing I'll say about the 2021 Oscars in closing is that when the shit hit the fan in 2020 and it became very evident that you and I were not going to get all the movies we were expecting and that it was going to be a lot more like of the indie stuff and a lot more of the artsy stuff and a lot more of the storytelling than maybe we would have liked in terms of big movie releases, I was pretty worried, right? I was pretty concerned with the overall quality of all the films we would get out of this year that was dominated by COVID. And we got lucky, I would say. I think we still got so many movies worth watching out of a year that was just utter shit. And some of them we got lucky and they were filmed before the shit hit the fan. Some of them they were able to figure out a way to make it work. But seriously, Minari and I cannot remember her name to save my life, but she won actress in a supporting role. The grandma from Minari was phenomenal. Yes. Mm-hmm. Every movie I've, Hillbilly Elegy, Glenn Close alone is worth watching in that. The two I haven't seen any of that I don't know if I will are The Father and Mank.
Okay.
I don't feel drawn.
So Mank is pretty high on my list, but I know it's going to be one that I'm going to have to watch by myself.
Yeah.
But like, the movies that Hollywood loves because they're sucking their own, you know, D's
their own penises
off. Uh-huh. I'm with them. I want to see that stuff. That's up my alley too.
You're right. Me too. So that's fair. I'm in on Mank.
Plus, now this was a big Twitter topic as well last night. Mank, which is about Citizen Kane, now actually has more Oscars than Citizen Kane does. It won two. Citizen Kane only has one Oscar. So that was a little fun piece of trivia.
That is silly as hell.
Yeah, but Mank falls into the same category. None of these movies are necessarily like, yeah, come watch me. I'm so sexy and fun.
Right.
Like, they're all kind of work.
Come get a beat down.
Yeah, so
you want to go fucking deaf?
The Father, I'm probably out on that one. I usually draw the line at movies about Alzheimer's.
That's your line? Oh, shit. Yeah.
That's just, I don't know of a more... You know, that's just the worst.
Having watched two people at this point get decimated by this fucking disease.
I mean, maybe you're more prepared for it than I am.
I'm less prepared. It is so fucked up, man. Like, I know it's one of those things where you either know somebody who's had Alzheimer's and you understand how devastating it is, or you don't, and you need to watch The Father. I'm in the former category, so I'm going to go ahead and skip out on Anthony Hopkins in an Alzheimer's film. I don't need that shit. Yeah. I'm too busy watching Riz lose his hearing as a heavy metal drummer.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But seriously, Sound of Metal, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, Minari, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Tenet. I mean, just a ton of movies from last year that we ended up loving and at the very least, enjoying enough to recommend. I am looking forward to watching Trial of the Chicago 7, Mank. There was another one that I was really stoked on seeing soon. I need to finish Nomadland.
Another Round looks phenomenal.
Yes.
Definitely.
My mom started that yesterday.
Yeah.
And then I saw, first of all, Mads, the dude who's in it, and he's just awesome.
Yeah. Phenomenal.
My OG Casino Royale villain has transformed himself into like one of the, the chief is now one of the biggest actors on the planet. Apparently, Leonardo DiCaprio liked the fucking film so much that they just made... He bought the American rights to the American English version.
Really?
And everybody was like, hey, guy, that doesn't make a bit of fucking sense.
Please, don't do that.
Don't
Come
do
on,
that.
Leo.
They were like, "It's what country is it that that story takes place in?
Oh, for some reason I want to say it's Norway, but it might be Germany.
It's not Germany. It's one of those, Norway, Sweden, one of the other ones, and I'm ignorant, but apparently it's very based in their culture. Like, the story... makes way more sense told as it is because it's this cultural...
Yes, right.
If you do that... Danish. So the Americanized version of that, it almost like doesn't translate just on a face value level. So I'm very curious to see what Leonardo DiCaprio is doing there. I get the feeling he's looking around going, wait a minute, God damn it! Why am I the only one of my boys not making $700 million a year with a production company? Yeah. I've been spending all this time trying to save the polar bears and penguins... Fuck. And now he's looking at all these other dudes and he wants to get in on that action, but I don't know if he made the right pick here.
Yeah.
Judas and the Black Messiah, I will say one more time, and now I'm done speaking Oscars. That's all I have to say.
Okay.
That's all I have to say about that. You ready to talk about something else?
Yeah. Let's move on.
You made me make a note today.
I did.
Broadway boys are back, and I need to know what the hell you're talking about.
I do, but that'll be quick, and I want to make sure that we have time to talk about Mare of Easttown.
Let's do that first, then.
Because I think that this is... probably the best thing on TV right now, and
I'm looking forward to this.
And it feels like something that that a lot of people are watching.
Okay, let me ask you straight up front. Mare of Easttown, HBO Max, What is it about this that you think is getting so many people to talk about it as highly as they are? Because it's a good story, and you know I love this type of shit, but come on, we've been down this road 100 times.
Yeah, and this is a, and we've been down it so many times because people love this shit, including me. I'm mad that I can't binge this one. I'm mad that I have to wait week by week. I love that.
I'm also with you.
But it's, the anticipation for this show to come out every Sunday I'm also very, very happy to have a Sunday night show. Right?
Okay, I think that's a big part of it then. Because I think it's been a minute for a lot of us since we had a show that we went, damn, I wish I could watch the next episode right now, which obviously Mayor of Easttown is set up very well to make you wish you could watch the next episode immediately after finishing the one you're watching.
But this is, no, man, this is a gritty crime procedural with like a whole lot of time for actual storytelling and just like, man, look, you're watching these episodes and not that much plot happens. Like the story is moving on, but you're also just like living with Mayor's family in the town and the fact that everybody knows one another and everybody's like burdens, whether they have cancer or they lost their daughter or both, or their child killed themselves or their daughter's being arrested for like, you know, aggravated assault. Like it, or you're a book prize winner that has to come teach at like the Podunk College in town. Like just on, like you're just like living in the,
meet that dude?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guy Pierce. Yeah. We were both wearing Rowdy Gentleman t-shirts.
That's so weird.
Shouts to Guy Pierce.
He's still out there getting it, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Big fan of Guy Pierce.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's been phenomenal on this show far.
Yeah, it's just well done. It shares ties with, like, you know, whenever I watch something where the town is kind of, it's grittier, it's blue collar, I think about movies like Winter's Bone or... you know, even to some extent, like a movie like Fargo or just, you know, it's a great murder mystery. We got, and then to the cherry on top is that you have Kate Winslet just movie starring it up on HBO, which is incredible.
Which is very, very nice.
Yes.
Yeah. Kate Winslet is, I think it's kind of like easy to forget, but she's an A-list actress.
Yeah.
And this is a big deal for her to take on. Even in the age of everybody doing this, like to take on an HBO Max crime procedural
sort of. I think this is an
HBO
show.
Okay.
I think this one is technically, it's. I don't think this is an HBO Max original.
I don't like how they're branding them differently.
I think it is an HBO show.
So are HBO Max originals, that is a different category and class than an HBO original.
Yes, because they never play on HBO.
Got it. That is interesting.
If you have the HBO channel, you can queue up Mayor of Easttown on Sunday nights at 8 or whatever.
Right.
It's on your channel.
Okay.
HBO Max originals are like they're Netflix shows, right?
Right.
They only on the streaming the streaming service.
Got it. Okay, yeah. This is definitely on HBO.
Yeah.
but yeah, it's a big deal to have Kate Winslet in there. I mean, this cast is awesome. It's kind of random feeling.
It is, like, but it works, man.
That's what makes it work. Yeah, but David Denman from
Roy from The Office.
From The Office,
yeah.
Seeing him play a completely different type of role. Guy Pierce,
dude. How about Evan Peters? Playing way against type. We never see him in roles like this where he's actually like playing his actual age and is a more serious character and is not like some wisecracking asshat.
Yeah, this is fucking
which
great.
He does phenomenally, by the way. I'm not holding that against him.
What he's the best at.
I like seeing him get an opportunity to do something different.
And I want to see what he's able to do. Like, clearly him and Mayor's relationship is going to be a complicated element of this season.
Yep.
He is her new partner. You know how it is with cops.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I don't need a partner or a new partner. What about my old partner? And, like, there's always this drama. So they're going to have a relationship.
Right, dude, that's the thing. The beats of this show are so, like, you know them by hand.
I know.
They're cliches. They're borderline cliches. But Gone Girl is another one I mean, I could just go on naming crime
films.
There's
a bajillion of them,
yeah. There's a bajillion. But, like, and so that's why these turns, these bumps, like, we know them. But when it's really well done, this is one of the most compelling and attractive types of TV or film out there. Because we love a mystery. We love crime drama.
The thing that Mayor of Easttown does, and that so many shows and movies like it do well, is it explores the human element of these situations, yeah. right? Like, yes. if you were in a community that was ravaged by this murder, what would happen? And what you see through two episodes of Mayor of Easttown is that, like, yeah, this community was super fucked way before that murder, and the murder is just the catalyst to people finding that out. By the end of episode two, we're scratching our heads like, oh, no. This doesn't seem like it's going to a very happy place yeah. in terms of how we got here and exploring who killed this girl.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a mess, Easttown.
Yes, and they're doing such a nice job of, like, you know, tying little ropes together at every stage of the way without actually having to tell you, but, like, everything's so connected. I loved how in the first episode how you meet Mare's friend and you meet the sister of the addict who she's trying to help out but trying mm-hmm. to get to return the stolen stuff. And you meet the woman that's mad at her because her daughter's been missing for a year. And then all those people are the starting five of the basketball team that's being celebrated.
Yeah.
And then in episode two, she's like arresting Brianna. And you don't realize it at first, but she's working at her parents' restaurant.
Yeah, so when the dude comes out and he's like, Mare, stop it. And then he's like, then you realize, oh my God, that's your father and the restaurant
she's
owner.
She's making the scene in people in the restaurant that is owned by people that she knows and is probably somewhat close to.
30 years they've known each other.
As evidenced by the fact that her mom is like, what are you doing out there, Pat? Okay, come inside.
Yep.
And then the mom of the missing girl for a year is like working at the convenience store. There's just so many ties. It's so like, it's such a tightly knit community and yes. they're doing such an amazing job of just like, kind of slowly showing you and let that unraveling without ever actually having to be like, oh, well, she works at the convenience store. Like, it's so natural.
Just well written.
It's
yeah.
well written. Yeah.
It's been good.
I'm loving it.
It's been very good. I'm not trying to take that away from it at all. I guess I've been a little surprised by the amount of hype I've seen mainstream wise. And I think it is because we have been waiting to yeah. have another Sunday night show and we've been waiting yes. for something that would make us feel the need to binge when we couldn't.
Yes. And it's also like, I do not want to take away from like Mandalorian or the Marvel shows over on Disney Plus, but those are the shows so far, like over the last 3-4 months that have mm-hmm. been dominating the zeitgeist and the talk.
Yep.
And so while those are great, it's like a very specific type of show. We talk a lot about that. They mean a lot for a lot of the conversation around them is about what happened prior or what will happen next. They're setups, right?
Right.
Oh, now we have like Anthony Mackie's going to be Captain America. Like, this is fucking huge. Like, we're talking about Captain America 4, right?
Yes.
Watch out, Will Smith, by the
I
way.
I still can't
now that this
believe.
Man is Cap.
Yeah, no, I just to stop for a second there, I think you may have had, like, the most correct and like, early take ever with that. What's his name? Anthony Mackie. Anthony Mackie, I think you could argue now already, as a result of becoming Black Captain America, spoiler alert, is having a better career than Will Smith.
Yeah, I mean, he was Papa Doc.
I mean, that
don't forget that.
And Papa Doc. He was Papa Doc.
So it's also nice to just have like something that's very siloed again. Something that we're all teed up to watch together once a week on a Sunday night, but it doesn't act, but the conversation around it doesn't have to be about anything but what's happening on the show.
About the $40 billion franchise they're building out in movie theaters and every platform.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. You're right.
So that's a nice just like wrinkle about it's not that we haven't had shows that everybody's watching, but to have one back on HBO that's kind of its own thing.
Yeah.
And is definitely not going more than 6 episodes. Like it's good. It's a good thing.
6 episodes.
I think it's 6 episodes. Yeah.
Christ, that's terrifying. Because yeah. we've seen 2 already.
Yeah.
What were you going to tell about Broadway?
Okay, Broadway boys. The Broadway boys are back.
Broadway boys are back.
Okay, I'm going to link a lot of different things here. So
bear
so
with you.
Excuse the free association and bear with me here.
Okay.
I've been watching Younger. Been catching up on Younger. Season 7 is available now like week by week. It's the final season. It's on Paramount Plus and on Hulu. They share the streaming rights. Season 7, all filmed under COVID, I believe. And so that's just one. That's just a little aside. As I've been watching to see if I can like pick out like, do I feel it? Can I tell that that they've had to shape and mold some things?
Uh-huh.
Anyway, 2 stars of that show are Hilary Duff and a woman named Sutton Foster, who I know exclusively from the show Younger. She plays the, you know, she plays the main character, the woman who faked her age to work at a publishing company as a 20-something millennial instead of the 40-something-year-old woman that she was.
Okay.
She's phenomenal. She's great in it. She's lots of fun to watch. She carries the role, you know, very well in the early seasons, especially. She's very believable as a 20-something.
You're 7 seasons into this?
Yeah.
Have you ever brought it up?
We've talked about it on the show a couple times.
You've watched 7 seasons of a show called Younger with Hilary Duff in it.
I'm on the 7th season now.
The 7th and final season.
7th and final season.
Okay.
So I've definitely looked up Sutton Foster before.
Right.
But I looked her up again, and I guess I didn't dig very deep, because Sutton Foster is a 3-time Tony Award winner for Best Actress in a Musical. She is a dominant Broadway actor that has been in tons of different shows.
Oh, wow.
And is, like, very, very famous on the New York Broadway scene. And so I like fell down a rabbit hole a few nights ago where I'm like watching her do performances from Anything Goes at the Tonys. And she is just like an unbelievable dancer and singer and actress and performer. Then I'm watching her give an acceptance speech at the 2011 Tonys where she was dating Bobby Cannavale. She like, he's sitting there, they kiss, she thanks him. And then like 2 years later, she's married to somebody else. So I'm just like having this epiphany, like, oh my God, this is a, no wonder she's so wildly talented in the show. She is a performer in like the truest sense of the word. So this got me thinking about Broadway and just how that's right along there with going to the movie theaters. I'm just, it'd be so nice to go see a show again.
Yeah.
And she is set to co-star in another Broadway musical that has gotten bumped twice now, but is set to start this fall. Younger is wrapped, Younger is done. So she is back to Broadway opposite Hugh Jackman, my man's Wolverine, who also is a phenomenal Broadway actor.
He is, and a great singer and dancer.
And a revival of a very, very famous musical called The Music Man.
Well, oh, shit!
So, Broadway boys here, I am like, I gotta see this. I have to go see Sutton Foster and Hugh Jackman and The Music Man at some point on Broadway in that run. While both of them are still performing, it's kind of a toss up about how hard this will be to see. I don't think anything ever quite reaches the heights of Hamilton, where it's like $1,000 for a nosebleed ticket, and it's just like, this will be very popular. But I was on a random trip to New York once for work, and like, I was able to pop in for a last minute seat and see Bradley Cooper and Elephant Man. Like my family and I were able to see like Book of Mormon in its early run. Like, you know, regular Broadway shows is not cheap by any means, but it's also not
inaccessible.
Hamilton inaccessible. And so I legitimately am hopeful to make my way up there and see the two of them in.
Why are you talking about it, you horse's ass? Now you're building the hype so that everybody's going to go see it and it's going to be harder for us to see.
One more thing.
I've seen this movie, Bo, by the way, the 1962 film.
Of The Music Man?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's very exciting. So that was my first big revelation about Sutton Foster. But now we're talking about Hamilton. We're talking about Broadway. There is another movie coming out this summer. It was supposed to come out last summer. It's Lin-Manuel Moreira.
Is there snapping involved?
I'm sure there is snapping involved. This was his first big success on Broadway. It is now a movie. Not like a Hamilton-style movie, but like they actually did a movie. It's called In the Heights.
Yeah, In the Heights.
This was supposed to be a big summer film last year. It's now one of the ones that's coming straight to HBO Max this summer, but it will also be in theaters. And the lead song off of this album popped up on my like New Music Friday or Release Radar on Spotify, and it's called In the Heights.
Shocking.
And it's like a 7-minute jam.
No shit.
It sounds like a song from Hamilton. No shocker there.
It's yeah, he's got a style.
It's Lin-Manuel, and he has a very specific style, which I didn't totally realize. Now I do. His stuff
pretty,
sounds the same.
Replicatable, I guess I'll put it. He kind of anyway, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Not to take away from him, but just saying.
But
very specific.
Go
to
check
his
out the song, because if you're a Broadway boy or a Broadway girl like us, you're gonna like it, because it's a phenomenal Lin-Manuel Miranda rap show tune. Which is just a true guilty pleasure.
It is.
Like, it's so boppy, and it's so, like, It sounds like a Broadway hip-hop show tune, but it's amazing.
I still have songs from that stupid musical Hamilton stuck in my head. It's been a year and a half since I watched it.
So we've got In the Heights. The music is on Spotify now. The movie's coming soon. Lin-Manuel Miranda, Sutton Foster, Broadway. Broadway is back. Let's go to Broadway. Hugh Jackman, Wolverine. Let's do this, Broadway boys.
People helping people. No, I'm excited, man. It's one of those things where, like, you just mentioned, oh, you know, the music's available already, and some people are probably like, why would you go listen to the music before you're able to see the... Yeah, musicals are weird like this. Yeah. It really doesn't take anything away. Like, you could actually listen to the entire album, get the story,
yep,
and then go watch the play and have absolutely nothing in any way, shape, or form sullied for you, because watching it unfold on stage in real time is the magic of theater.
It is also... It's honestly... It's actually a pretty brilliant thing to do, because the one thing about seeing a live show, whether it's just a traveling show or your local high school or on Broadway, is you're going to miss a lot of what's sung in these songs. It's just impossible to pick up all the lyrics. So you're going to get the idea of the story, but then, like, that's why it's so much fun to listen to the music after you see the show, because you can pick up all the things that you kind of missed.
And you can see the show in your head at that point.
So there's no sweat, there's no harm, there's no foul in doing that prior to the show. So you actually know, like, some of the lyrics and what they're saying, what they're talking about, and then you get to see and visualize the performance.
Right.
Yeah, nothing taken away.
It's the best.
So.
Yeah, Broadway boys are back.
Broadway boys are back.
Last thing I want to say today before we leave. I watched Mortal Kombat 2021. Did you get the opportunity?
No, I was not. I tried to start it over the weekend on three different occasions.
And you were shut down.
And I was shut down all three times.
Okay.
I even tried to get up on Sunday morning and start it, and the initial blast of sound coaxed the significant other out of the bedroom, and she was like, "What are you doing?" No,
it's the opposite of the smell of bacon in the morning.
Yeah,
you have to get out of bed and stop the other person from watching Mortal Kombat.
Right.
I watched it because, you know. I was a huge fan of Mortal Kombat, the game, when I was a kid. The stupid song, Mortal Kombat, has been stuck in my head since I was a child. This was a no-brainer for me. It's on HBO Max. It's free. I knew it was going to be absolutely ridiculous. I was stoked going in. You will like it at some point when you get to watch it.
Yeah.
It's unbelievably silly.
I heard that the music was lacking.
They did not give you you wanted.
Right. They didn't even give you a little homage to the kind of 90s techno thing.
It was weird to not get that. But they took a lot of strange angles here, because I think they wanted enough differentiation from the OG movie, and they wanted to be able to build from here. So I'm just going to tell you one of the things they did. This is not a spoiler. Well, yeah, it is. It doesn't matter, though, because it's Mortal Kombat. Johnny Cage, you know Johnny Cage. He's the white protagonist from Mortal Kombat.
Yes.
He's not in this.
He wears no shirt and cool sunglasses.
He's not in this at all.
And a flat top for the white man.
They introduce... Yeah, flat top for the white man. And they introduce this at the end of the movie. They're like, that's the big teaser for number two. So they were like, what if we do another Mortal Kombat? And somebody was like, oh, who would play Johnny Cage? And they were like, what if we didn't put Johnny Cage in the movie and we held that as the big, like, fish hook at the end?
Is Johnny Cage revealed in person here?
No.
So they're, like, hoping to get, like, a real, like an actor, a named actor.
They're trying to reel somebody in. And watching this unfold, like, they went with a lot of, there's no big name stars in this, okay? It's mostly lesser known actors and actresses. And they take a strange angle at the beginning where you go back to, like, the origins of the Sub-Zero Scorpion fight. They go full Marvel. They were like, fuck it, we can do whatever we want. Everybody can do whatever they want now. We have to try to build out a universe. What if we make 10 Mortal Kombat movies and $400 billion? Like, we have to try. And that's what they did. And they made it semi-interesting. And really, you know, it's a Mortal Kombat movie. You're there for the fighting and the violence and the blood sport of it all, right? If they can do even a remotely good job making the story mildly interesting, they've won. They did. They did an okay job. They took a weird angle, one where I wasn't really sure what they were going to do. It ends up being the sort of stupid tournament thing, but in a different way than you would. None of this is what you expect.
Okay.
None of it, which I think is a huge win for them.
So they did actually differentiate it from the first film.
Yes, they did a very good job. I thought there was a lot of things they did super, super well. Visually, it's awesome. Just fun as hell to watch.
Okay.
But then in terms of making it different enough, they did a really good job. This is a win in terms of, like, HBO Max. This is what you want, baby.
Totally.
And this is the kind of thing that gets you competing with Netflix.
Yep. And this is, look, man, this thing that Warner Brothers and HBO Max have done where they're letting these movies go to the streaming service, no charge, they are dominating Twitter in the cultural conversation when they come out. They wouldn't have just straight to theaters.
No, they would have just been another movie.
Yeah. And like it's Mortal weird. Kombat, like it may have been a, you know, I don't think the movie cost a shit ton to make. So like maybe it would have been a technical box office success, but it wasn't going to like be number one. Like it wasn't going to be like, it was definitely not going to get well reviewed by critics. So the fact that they can just throw this on the streaming service and it's like a big movie franchise, maybe, but something that definitely is going to get Twitter going and get the people talking and like these are wins. I think they're crushing it with this little release model, and it's really perfect for these movies where like they're like just under what it would take to get you to the theater. So whether right. you know what I mean, like whether yes. it's whether it's Mortal Kombat or whether it's like the Denzel Jared Leto one.
Oh, what was the one that was really good we enjoyed last year with the fucking dude from the Lonely Island and Palm Springs?
Yeah. So, they're crushing it. I can't wait to watch In the Heights on HBO Max. Like, I can't watch there are a couple others that are coming that beyond the ones that I'm going, like I'm going to the theater for Dune. That's another one that I'll.
Oh, absolutely,
go back for.
Absolutely going for Dune.
But yeah.
HBO Max, man. So. Well, let me tell you some good news, Barrett. The Mortal Kombat reboot crushed financially. Yeah. Absolute dominance.
Oh,
they brought
the
in 22.5 million weekend one.
That's not bad.
It only costs like 50 million to make. So they're in a very good spot already. 55 million it looks like it took to make.
Huzzah.
Looks like they've already done 51 mil in the box office potentially. I can't really tell. Or maybe that's the old one. Anyway, here's the news. This is indisputable fact from sci-fi.com. The video game adaptation collected an international bounty of beating hearts worth $6.3 million for a worldwide haul of $50 million. Warner Bros. Should have no problem making a nice profit over the $55 million production budget, which means ... sequels galore. And one of the funniest pieces of information that you could possibly know about this franchise is that the dude who plays Sub-Zero, Joe Taslim, has signed on for 5 films. They sat Joe down and they were like, Joe, we want you to be Sub-Zero. He's going to be one of the main characters or you win. Okay. And Joe was like, I would like you to now sign me to 5 of these. 5. Which is chaos.
Thinking about the video game, thinking about this movie, aside from Johnny Cage, any characters that were glaringly missing? Did we get Raiden?
Yes.
Did we get Sonya?
Yes.
Did we get Kano?
Yes. Kano is the movie maker.
Did we get Goro?
Yes.
Did we get Liu Kang?
Yes, but Goro is a yes and a no.
Okay.
I don't know how to explain that. You'll have to watch.
Did we get Liu Kang?
Yeah, he's like the dude.
We obviously got Sub-Zero. We got Scorpion.
Scorpion. Liu Kang. But this is what I mean. Like, you get straight Sub-Zero. Like, they're like, hey, look, it's Sub-Zero. He freezes everything with his hands.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, cool. Well, what about, where's the Scorpion? Because you're going to have Sub-Zero. You got a Scorpion. And they don't, like, directly do it the way, I can't say. I can't spoil it.
Okay. All
it's
right.
phenomenal. All right. For what it is, huge win. You're going to love it. It's right in your fucking wheelhouse,
okay,
Barrett.
I cannot wait.
Everybody go watch Mortal Kombat before you watch all the Oscar-nominated movies we spoke to earlier. And make sure you get your greens because it has begun. We'll be back next week with more movie and TV talk. But before then, we'll be back on Thursday on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles with yet another episode of The Sopranos coverage, Barrett. We're doing The Sopranos week by week, episode by episode.
Maron.
Spoiler-free, friendly to both first-time viewers like Barrett and multiple repeat watchers like myself. patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Cannot wait.
Look what they did to my boy.
They massacred my boy.
Massacred my boy.
I watched The Godfather last night again. I have a problem. No one should have seen this movie as many times as I have now watched it. Be back next week. Cannot wait for Game of Thrones coverage in 2022 with all y'all. It's going to be a blast. patreon.com/oystersclamscockles for The Sopranos. Until our next helping. Adios. muchachos.